Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. This evening is June 2nd, Thursday, 2011. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. First, a moment of housekeeping. Darlene Heckman runs our customer service. She's fabulous. Her number, our customer service number is 888-755-3548. It's on the website. If you're having any problems, you're not getting your email updates, you need help navigating the control panel, you want to give us feedback about what we can do to make the Soleri Report experience more excellent for you, just let Darlene know at 888-755-3548. We want to make sure this works for you. Tonight, just a marvelous guest, Bertram Verhaag of Denkmal Films in Munich. He's on vacation in the Austrian Alps, so we recorded him this morning. It was evening, his time, morning, my time here in California. We are talking with him about his documentary thriller, Scientist Under Attack, and a whole series of other wonderful documentary he's made about genetically modified food and many other subjects. A remarkable person and a remarkable company. I've put links to up on the blog next to the, we'll go to the very top, and what you'll see is we listed some of the films we talk about in the interview and the links that will take you to where you can buy them, either from his website or when you can buy at Amazon, when you can buy at Bullfrog Films. Our theme tonight is QE3 chicken. I've talked many weeks before about the QE3, which stands for not the Queen Elizabeth III, but Quantitative Easing III. We've seen two large rounds of quantitative easing, and the current one, QE2, ends at the end of June. And, of course, the question is, will there be a QE3? Everybody here has probably heard of the game of chicken, among other things, applied to two cars racing at each other. And the question is, who will chicken out first and turn and swerve? And that's what you're watching. A lot of what you're watching in the news and in the marketplace this week is really a political war, and it's getting pretty shrill. And there are two clear transactions which are in play. One is, what do they need to do to get a QE3? And the second is, what do they need to get a budget deal? We still are watching the debt limit and the debt operation held hostage by an inability of all the parties to agree as to how to trim the growing deficits. Now, I consider this sort of the marketing campaign. Let's look at what we've seen. We've seen worse and worse headlines every day this week in the Wall Street Journal. The housing market's in double dip. Now, some of this is very real. Unemployment continues to look bad. Food stamps up. We saw the Drudge Report this week announce that the Great Depression was here. We had Moody's come out today intimating that the federal credit was in trouble and a downgrade could be a possibility if we didn't get a proper debt deal. And you've seen more and more banker and politician scandals. Believe it or not, we now have an Egyptian banker accused of raping a maid in a hotel room, and a congressman who's, believe it or not, who's named Congressman Weiner of Brooklyn, accused of sending out a picture of himself in underwear on Twitter mail. He's saying he's being hacked. All of these things indicate a real war because the economy was not as good as they said it was a year ago, and it's certainly not as bad as they're saying now. What I think you're seeing is an effort to create some significant popular support for policies that further drain Main Street, both a QE3 and a budget deal that raises taxes or cuts benefits to Main Street, you know, particularly the big ones that are coming in to be cut are Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. So it's the old thing we've talked about, the whole squabble between the creditors versus the military versus the retirees. And we're certainly seeing at the state level the effort, big headlines of New Jersey Governor Christie talking about we just have to cut contracts and promises and benefits to whether it's labor or retirees. So the question, of course, is who's going to get gouged? And nowhere is there a real conversation about how much money has disappeared out the back door to the banks on the bailout. You know, and that conversation needs to happen, but it hasn't really begun yet. But the politics feel very intractable. The U.S. dollar gave back some of its May gains when it looked this week as though we really would come up with another Greek restructuring, Germany kind of getting its way in the sort of European politics that need to make for a Greek deal. That sparked a euro rally at the same time Moody's warning of the U.S. sovereign debt downgrade. The competition between the U.S. and Europe is intensifying. No sooner had Moody's announced their report on the possibility of U.S. downgrade that the reports talking about a worsening of the E. coli outbreak in Germany and Europe intensified, with rumors on the internet that it was really biowarfare. Now, in defense of the rumors, every time I see that kind of thing on food safety, I'm equally suspicious. It's sort of the food equivalent of raping a maid in a hotel room. The Pentagon announced that it is close to a final policy, a new doctrine on cyber attacks, such that if the United States or it's not clearly defined exactly what that is, whether it's just government, military, or the country, aka Google, has happened today. But if the United States is attacked in cyber attacks, it reserves the right to respond with physical warfare. One military official told the Wall Street Journal, quote, "If you shut down our power grid, maybe we will put a missile down one of your smokestacks." But it certainly underscores the importance of this sort of, you know, warfare on every front, everywhere you turn, whether it's economic warfare, cyber warfare, physical warfare, covert warfare, economic warfare, it's all intensifying. The Germans announced on May 30, very important, the German government has announced that the 7 nuclear power reactors they shut down in the aftermath of Fukushima will never be reopened, and in fact, they announced they are planning on shuttering the entire German nuclear fleet by 2022. How exactly they're going to replace about one-third of their electricity needs by closing the nuclear sector and coming up with a replacement on renewable energy, which would probably be pretty expensive, remains to be seen. Whether it's feasible or not remains to be seen. I continue to believe that Fukushima is a wild card. No news there, but clearly we have a situation which is far from under control, and so the politics of nuclear are going to continue to be quite sensitive. Let alone what it may mean to the Pacific Ocean and the Japanese people and everyone else impacted. Goldman got a subpoena from the Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance. On top of the $500 million settlement they reached with the SEC, this is a pretty interesting development. The thing that is most interesting about it, though we haven't seen a copy of the subpoena, is the subpoena applies to the whole company. The reason that's important is that a subpoena that could apply to all systems and all digital archives could literally gridlock the company's operations. I mean, operationally, this could be a huge nightmare, particularly if the Department of Justice starts to subpoena and private litigants pile on as well. We saw Goldman was in real risk of, if there had been a Greek default, of running real liability for their participation in derivatives deals that helped to essentially hide some of the Greek budget problems. Interestingly enough, this week, the Wall Street Journal came out with an incredible story on Libya and Goldman's investments for the Libyan Sovereign Wealth Fund in 2008, which wiped out 98% of a $1.5 billion investment by Goldman for the Libyans after the loss in less than a year. Can you imagine losing 98% of an investment in less than a year? Goldman executives attempted to make up the loss by selling preferred shares of the firm to Libya. When CNBC remarked it was kind of like It said, quote, "You have to admire the sheer self-confidence of Goldman offering to sell a stake in itself to Libya after losing so much of the country's money. It's like a used car dealer offering to let you loan money to the dealership after selling you a lemon." The greatest quote of all on the situation was that one senior Goldman investment banker apparently told CNBC, quote, "The last thing we need right now would be headlines reading Vampire Squid Profits Funding Libyan Director." But you read the story, and again, it reads, I mean, you can't imagine that the world has gotten this ridiculous, that this really happened. It really reads a little bit like a Tom Clancy novel. There's a lot of excess capacity in the financial industry, and the White House needs some headlines that they are tough on crime. Wall Street saying that it's inconceivable Goldman's too big to fail, let alone too big to prosecute. At the same time, you know, this squabble may not be over whether Goldman makes, you know, survives the year or not. It could be over whether Blankfein is leaving, who the new chairman is going to be, who's going to be in control, and certainly competitors would love to take market share incrementally. So what this means, we don't know. We have to see if DOJ proceeds to subpoena and how things evolve. But it's clearly a sign of the times. And Goldman has been seriously weakened, and that's a significant development in Wall Street and the financial markets. Bottom line, one of the challenges we're watching is that markets are not allowed to function. So there's no way for disagreements and preferences to be sorted out with price or markets to mark to market. Instead, they're being sorted out with politics and force. And it's part of what makes the environment seem so weird, because the lies of economic warfare, the political warfare, just, you know, sometimes I you all know my expression, it just keeps getting weirder. But this was certainly a week where it has felt weird. I'm afraid that warfare may include weather warfare, as we're watching the patterns of tornado and strange weather operating across the country. I was struck by a comment that I got from a subscriber this week who sent me a story about the Chicago Mercantile Exchange has now created a future on rain. So you can invest in rain futures. They already have hurricane futures, temperature futures, frost and snow futures. Don't be surprised if we start to see tornado futures coming out. The subscriber wrote, "I was talking with a neighbor just a few days ago about the wild weather we've been having, including the recent tornado predominantly in low-income and black neighborhoods in my city, and she asked, why is it that these tornadoes are hitting poor people? My guess is that they are, in fact, hitting neighborhoods where there's significant black budget mortgage fraud. As you know, I continue to believe a lot of fraudulent mortgages are being cleaned up by putting them in the FHA and federal mortgage funds behind the guise of emergency provisions, and that we are funding a covert QE3 already under the guise of the very liberal provisions of what you can do in an emergency." We got a question from a subscriber. "Will you explain what happens to mortgages when the Fed or banks push them back into the FHA? Does this mean the federal government debt absorbs these mortgage debts?" Well, it depends. If they're putting them back into the MMI fund and the general funded FHA, what will happen is they will be defaulted into the FHA fund. It won't hit the Treasury debt limits in the MMI fund. It will come out of the reserves and cash surpluses in that fund. And so what will happen is premium profits that were supposed to go back or to be used elsewhere instead will be siphoned off, in essence, to clean up the quote-unquote defaults, you know, whether or not they're fraudulent or not. If they are not single-family homes, if they're apartment buildings, hospital, other kinds of mortgages, they'll go into the general fund. Ultimately, that'll hit a line at Treasury, and yes, it'll hit the federal government debt totals. Same at the VA. It could siphon off surpluses. Interestingly enough, you know, we don't know what they're doing with Fannie and Freddie, but similar things could be happening at Fannie and Freddie, and that would, in fact, hit the federal government debt totals. The administration is now resisting FOIA applying to Fannie and Freddie, which is not surprising for many reasons, but certainly if I am right about a covert QE3, it's the last thing they want is FOIAs into Fannie and Freddie. A couple questions. One other question in Ask Catherine. How can I determine which local bank would be safest, apart from the service and personnel? If you go to our bank intimate page, which is at solari.com/archive/banks, you can just pick it up on a search if you do solari.com/bank intimates. What you'll find is we provide a link to the StreetWatch ratings. There are a number of rating services, all useful, but if you use them, you can check ratings. The rating services are not perfect, but they are indicative of financial strength and soundness. One of the things I recommend, banks always will make available their financials. You can usually get a financial statement from their website. If they don't have it on their website, you can ask them. It's perfectly fine to ask them for a copy of their annual financial statements, and the most recent annual financial statement should have the last 2 years. If the annual financial statement was issued, you know, a fair time back, so 9 months ago, you may be able to get an interim. If they, for some reason, don't want to give you their financial statement, which is a very bad sign, but if they don't, there are filings at the FDIC that give you the same information. What I encourage people to do is, if you're not comfortable reading financial statements or don't feel like you can sit down and really underwrite their financial strength from looking at their financials, I really encourage you to ask a local CPA or accountant or somebody in the financial world who is very comfortable reading financial statements to look at them for you and just give you a sense of which they think are pretty sound. It's one of the advantages if you are looking for a local bank of what I call circling up with a group of people to do it together, because then it's easier to access these kinds of resources. If you do circle up with a group of people, it's pretty easy to ask a bank to give you presentations as a group. You can do it just by yourself, because banks very much want your business. So I'm sure they're willing to sit down, but a lot of times to ask about their financials, it's a lot easier to do it in a group. But I do think it's worth taking time to really to both look for and get to know and underwrite a great local bank, because generally the customer service is better, and I think in the long run you'll be much happier if you can find one. I have a great, as you know from listening to the Solari Report, a great local community bank is our banker, and it's been a real blessing to us. Okay, so that's it for Ask Catherine, and so now on to our interview. Bertram Verhaag is a filmmaker. He makes documentaries, and all to a certain extent, I'm going to let him introduce himself. I will say this: it is absolutely imperative for our financial health and for our health to have good information about any of the purchases or products and services that we use. And nothing is more disturbing to me and frustrating when people can't get good information that helps them understand what it is they're buying. I mean, imagine going into the marketplace and buying a share of, you know, bank XYZ stock and discovering, oh, it's not bank XYZ, it's, you know, it's bank ZDY who's worth half of that. Well, it's the same with food. When you buy, you know, you pick up and buy a tomato and think you're getting a tomato, but you're not. You're getting something that literally is not healthy, and nobody's told you, and you don't have the information you need to price that into your decision. It's very scary, and we're seeing that a lot in our world, the absence of accurate information, and therefore the ability to make choices, whether they're political choices, choices of who we have represent us, choices of what policies we want to support and promote, and what products we want to buy. So if we're going to exercise responsibility as consumers or as voters, we need accurate information. And of course, as we've seen all week long, a lot of the warfare first is warfare, over what the facts are and over what the policies are, and significant amount of disinformation and poor information. And that's why in this kind of milieu, any person like Bertram who will sit down and dig into complex and important topics and make accessible the information, not only in a way which is accurate and useful, but in a way that is interesting. Even one person in the review called The Scientists Under Attack a documentary thriller. And it really is. It's fascinating. It was, you know, it's a little bit like watching a Tony or Ridley Scott movie. So this is a really, really special guy, and our team made quite an effort to get over to in Germany and persuade him to do this interview, and I'm very glad he did. So without further ado, Bertram Verhaag.
Yeah, my name is Bertram Verhaag. I'm the co-founder of a film production company here in Germany, in Munich, which we found the name 35 years ago, which is Denkmal Film. That means if you really translate it, it's Denkmal, it's like a monument. And we wanted to make a sort of monuments that makes people think about the subjects that we are telling about. And our aim was from the beginning that we would be independent and that we chose our subjects only from the political, social, and environmental areas. And so I made five films. And we also always try to make on one subject more than one film. And when the industry planned the new nuclear reprocessing plant here near Munich, it's 1.5 hours by car, we decided to follow this process for 10 years. That means in a very Catholic area, where the people were said they were obeying very good to the authorities, the government thought that they could place there a nuclear reprocessing plant. But very soon the people found out that they were not asked, that something was built there. They don't know what it is and what the dangers are. They don't want to have it before their door. And so a big resistance in this area raised up, and also from all over Germany, a lot of people came there and made small villages with tents, and and there were also very radical young people coming in this region, and normally people from this region wouldn't speak with them or wouldn't invite them to their house, and so, and that changed, because the people there in the Oberpfalz, where this nuclear reprocessing plant should be built, should have been built, because it was stopped then. They invited these people and they discussed with them, and they found out, oh, in what sort of a democracy do we live? Do we really live? Are we asked? And the police was coming, and with an enormous power, the government tried to force to build this reprocessing plant in this area. And the more they force came from that side, the more resistance was coming up. And during nearly 8 years until the end of this reprocessing plant, it was quite built, but then the industry said, okay, we don't see any chance that we can't really build it with the support of judges, and people went to the court, and so they decided just before finishing the whole thing, they decided to bring their nuclear waste to France. There was already a big reprocessing plant, and our aim was to, with our camera, to accompany this process, and we did this for 8 years, and we made five films on this subject, and maybe it was also with our help and support and work what we done that the industry gave the project up at the end. Yeah, this was one example. Then I made a lot of films on racism, and our most important film we have, our most successful film, I have to say, which we made in this 30 years was the film Blue Eyed, and I shot it in the States with Jane Elliott, who made this famous Blue Eyed, Brown Eyed experiment and giving people a lot of new experience who participated in her process. And this was, there were already 5 films done in the States, but I thought I will do it in my own way, and it was the most successful film we had during this 3 decades.
Well, I must say, from watching the films that I've watched, you're an immensely talented producer and director. I mean, and clearly writer too. When did you start looking into genetically modified food?
Yes, it was nearly 10 years ago. Or I was asked in the beginning of the 90s. I was asked, would you make a film on the so-called cancer mouse, which was patented in the European Patent Office? And I said, no, I'm not a scientist. I don't know anything about genes, and I didn't learn it at school and whatever. And I said, no, somebody else should do that. It took 5 years, I think, that I read a very small article on the so-called Terminator seed. A Terminator seed is a seed which is by industry modified, genetically modified, that it will be fertile only one season. So you bring it out, you have your yield, but you can't use parts of this yield for the next year. And this opened my eyes from one second to another, that I started to understand why genetic engineering is done, and especially is done in the area of seeds and in the agriculture. And I said, okay, I don't have to be a scientist to clearly say I don't want this. I don't want that the industry is changing our the spring of life to make it fertile because of their interest to get power on the market or to earn money in a And so I decided I want to start and make films to this question, because I didn't understand in the beginning, not very much, and most of the people don't know what it is. And I know from the United States that they were quiet 10 or 15 years, or maybe most of the people still today don't really know what genetic engineering is and how it is already on the market. And that was one point that made me furious, that industry tries to change in this way our food and vegetables and everything. And the second thing is that I found out that industry is just introducing this technology in the society without asking me or without asking anybody. They just create a situation, and we can say now after 15 or 20 years how much cost and energy they bring in the world, which we could have used for wonderful other projects. And and these were the two motors that I started to make films on genetic engineering. And we made our first one, or not, we made, during the last 10 years, we made 9 films. But the first most important, which was, it's a 90-minute film, the title is Life Running Out of Control, which can be found in the States by Bullfrog Films. Bullfrog Films, they have the rights for the United States and Canada to distribute the DVD. And this film developed to the absolutely standard film on genetic engineering. If somebody doesn't know anything about it, he should look at this film and he will understand who is doing what in this.
I just have to interrupt you because that's the one I watched last night. I've been watching steadily for the last couple days, and I have to tell you, it's the best introduction to the topic that I found yet. It's absolutely outstanding. I'm just going to say the name again, Life Running Out of Control. And the subtitle is Gene Food and
Designer
Babies. And one of the things it goes into is not just the genetic modification of vegetables and fruits, but of animals. And it's absolutely terrifying. You may not want your young kids watching this, but it's important information, and it's information we have to look at. And one of the things that I think is fantastic about, you've really sought out wonderful people who have really done their research and are, you know, you see in the food area these people who are just givers of life, like Percy Schmeiser or you know, so many of the people you found, and you know, they love the idea of you know, feeding people with wonderful, healthy food, and they are so appalled by what's going on. And you really see it in a very responsible way. So it's fascinating, but it's very responsibly done. Anyway, so I'm sorry I interrupted, but I really want to underscore
also, it was also my interest to tell this story, which is a terrible subject if you see what industry is doing with our food. But on the other hand, I'm showing people who were fighting against it, who were trying to get knowledge, more and more knowledge out to the people that they understand. And everyone who is understanding what genetic engineering is doing, they won't buy it. And that's also the reason why it's not allowed to label it in the United States. Or maybe there are starting some states in the United States who allow labeling. But in general, the industry is fighting against labeling. And also in Europe, too.
Yeah, one of the things you really understand watching Life Out of Control, Running Out of Control, is how important labeling is. It's absolutely critical as one of the steps we need to deal with this. And and the fact that so much has been done to keep this switch invisible. And, you know, part of the economics, I look at everything from economics, is, you know, you think you're buying one thing, but you're buying something else. And that's part of the fraud.
Yeah. And that is what Arpad Pusztai in our film, Scientist Under Attack, or maybe I have to tell something other before. The last sentence in this film, Life Running Out of Control, is from a Norwegian scientist who said that he thinks that 95% of the scientists who are working in this area are paid by industry. So industry has the control over their research, over that part of the research which will be published or will be not published. And this was another motor for me to make this new film, Scientist Under Attack. And I found some scientists who were very optimistic, like Arpad Pusztai, towards genetic engineering. They said, okay, there may be something good on it. And then he made his feeding studies, and he made them quite a long time, long time more than normally industry is doing it. And he was very frightened by what he found out, that the immune system was down, that the rate of the organs were changed, and. All for him as a scientist, these were signs. We have to look what is happening there. If animals are eating, as in that case mice, are eating genetically modified potatoes. And then it happens that a TV crew came by and they asked him something. It was not planned, but He said, no, I wouldn't eat that until it's really in long-term studies researched. And the second thing, because he knew that already a lot of food was in the shelves of the supermarkets which contain genetically modified parts. And so he said, it's unfair to use our fellow citizens as guinea pigs. And after he said this, and this was transmitted in the BBC in England, 2 days later he was thrown out of the institute. He was forbidden to talk about anything that he did during his research, and so on and so on.
I believe it was Jeffrey Smith who documented the trail of the President Clinton calling Tony Blair, and then Tony Blair pressuring. And you know, as someone who's seen that kind of force come from the White House and similar sources, it's hard for most people to fathom the speed at which it will come all the way from the top down. And it's, you know, it's like a knife that just cuts through everything. And, you know, and it's very terrorizing. And you get enterprises and heads of research institutes just literally, you know, doing things. I mean, here we have a scientist who's very respected, you know, with, you know, years of peer-reviewed successes, and suddenly in 2 days he's bounced. And you know, it's a wonderful case study in you know, in what is making this go. And I think one of the points you make in it is not only this done to a very respected researcher, but in fact there's, you know, there's no financing available for researchers who want to do this kind of research.
That's it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was the astonishing thing for me, that I found out that during the 10 years that I was working on this subject, there is no study which really gives people the information, okay, you can use genetically modified food or you can't use it because they were dangerous and so on. There are no studies really done that give you the security to say, okay, now we can decide we want it or we don't want it. And that's also my democratic aspect. We are not informed that we were able to say yes or no. And it's absolutely astonishing that no government, even in Germany or in the States or in Canada, is really initiating this research, which is absolutely necessary for 5 to 10 years minimum to see the long-term consequences if people or even if animals are eating genetically modified food. And in Germany or in Europe, we have legislation that says, okay, each food that you eat, which contains more than 0.9 genetically modified parts, has to be labeled. But you nearly don't find anything which is labeled in that way, because the food industry doesn't like to write it down, and so they try to get these parts, which will be genetically modified, as down as possible. Because they know if they have to label it in that way, people wouldn't buy it. Because in all over Europe, there is until 80% of the people who say, just without knowing exactly things, but from their feeling or from their stomach, saying, no, I don't want to eat genetically modified food.
Well, I think of Europe as having been much more instrumental in slowing these developments down, because a lot of the pressure to do this is coming from the United States.
That's right.
Right, and so this is really sort of a poisoning of the seed and food system, which is being visited by, you know, on the world through the United States.
Mm.
Am I being too blunt?
Sorry?
I said, am I being too blunt about our our responsibility for kind of visiting this evil in the world.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely right what you say, because we have this legislation on the food which I just described, but we don't have a legislation on everything which is eggs, cheese, meat, milk, and everything which comes from animals who are fed with genetically modified feed. And this was not included in the legislation, and we don't have it until now. It's now the last 6 years we are fighting for this, to get also a labeling for example, milk, which comes from animals who have been fed by genetically modified soy or whatever. And that this process is in change is only to thank to the consumers who make demonstrations before big molkerei and the factories who make the milk, and tried to force these factories to influence their farmers to feed the cows in another way, in a conventional way or in a biological way, which would be better, but not genetically modified. That they can afterwards say, okay, our milk is free from genetically modification. And I just made a film in February, or it was transmitted in February, about feed and feed retailer who decided only to sell genetically free feed which is not genetically modified. And he was able to change a whole region with all his farmers, and he discussed with them and he persuaded them, and so he made a big change, and there were a lot of genetically modified free regions here in Bavaria, but also from Austria until the northern of Germany, which I'm proud was also created after seeing my film Life Running Out of Control. That people said, okay, this is a point we have to do something.
When did you make Killing Seeds?
Killing Seeds was really our first film. It was in 2001, I think, 2000 and 2001. But this was the story of some German farmers, but mainly on Percy Schmalzer. And this part we put in a new film, which we finished, I think, in 2010. About Percy Schmeisser, David versus Monsanto, where we showed the 10-year fight from Monsanto against Percy. And he is nearly 80 years old now, and he is still coming two or three times a year to Europe and making a tour with speeches and telling people, don't do it in the way like we did it in Canada.
One of the things I have to say, for those who don't know Percy Schmeisser, he's a Canadian farmer who got tangled in litigation with Monsanto. And one of the things, your interviews with him are so inspiring. He's such an inspiring and extraordinary person. What a leader. And with incredible courage. And anyway, but you know, the ones I've seen in both Killing Seed and Life Running Out of Control, you know, I've never seen that much footage on Percy Schmeisser, and it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful, very inspiring material.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and we have this 65-minute film only on him and his story and how Monsanto at the end... at the end, he has won, I think, because... He fighted until the Federal Court of Canada, and this court said you had damaged the patent right of Monsanto. But you didn't take advantage out of this because you didn't buy the chemicals that Monsanto is offering besides this, his Roundup. And so he don't have to pay any money to Monsanto. And then he went to his fields and he saw in the fields there were always every year coming up some of this Monsanto rapeseeds. And he phoned Monsanto and said, here, there's something on my field, please come and take it. They came over and looked at it and said, yes, it's our seed, you are right. But if you want us to take it away from your field, you have to sign a paper that you never will sue us again and members of your family and whatever, and not to speak about it and everything. And they both, Percy and his wife, said, no, we are not crazy, we don't do that. And so he said, okay, Monsanto, I'm taking some people and take it out of my field, and I will send you the invoice. And
fabulous.
Then Monsanto said, no, you can't do it because it's our property, the seeds, you can't take it out. Percy nevertheless did it, and he sent a check about $660 Canadian to Monsanto, and they refused to pay. So he took them to the court with this check, and finally, 5 minutes before the decision of the judge, they gave him the check and said, okay. And he can speak about it and he can do everything. But it's really a wonderful person, this Percy Schmeisser, who was mayor in his, or what do you say,
municipal. He was with a local municipality.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And so he was quite experienced also to fight with such companies and people. And finally he really has won his fight, and he could save his property from Monsanto, who really, in most of the processes, they win against the farmers who were identified for using their genetically modified seeds, even if it's only
right, so they pollute your property and suddenly you're liable to them. It's horrible.
Yeah.
One of the things you bring out is the relationship between, you see the importance of the scientists to the farmers, and how by literally getting the scientists out of the way, it's much easier to industrialize the process and really turn the farmers into serfs or put them out of business, which is what you see in India with the extraordinary number of suicides by farmers who've been basically destroyed by this industrialization of agriculture and dependency on big companies for their seed.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to mention the subtitle on Scientists Under Attack is Genetic Engineering in the Magnetic Field of Money, and I was hoping you could explain that subtitle, because it's very much of interest to me, the issue of how this relates to money.
Yeah, as I said, there were no really research done on the subject of genetic engineering. There were no real feeding studies which were done over a time period which can give you a real... can you really tell if it's good or if it's not good? I'm sorry for my English. It's not too good. I can.
I'm sorry for my German.
Okay. And on the other hand, as I told already, industry is just entering this sort of industry in our society without asking, and with the only interest to get power on this market. And they don't hesitate to say, okay, we want to get the power on the market from the field to the table where you eat your food, and they would like it most processed food. And that is the main motor. It's not for doing good to the consumers, or as they always try to tell us, to stop the hunger of the world. It never happened. And
right. The lies are very forceful and thick. And
what you see today, we show it in our film, Scientist Under Attack. We have a part in Brazil where a scientist is showing us in the field how how plants are overwhelming the soil, and the soil can't be ripe, and it even couldn't be harvested because it was so the stiels of the plants were so big that they can't be yielded. And now, and you know it better, you have millions of hectares in the United States which has the same situation. They can't be yielded because the plants who stop the soy or the cotton that you want to yield are no more able to be yielded. And if you see it now, the only advice that industry is giving, use more poison or use stronger poisons.
Right.
And that's in their interest to sell it, because they have been chemical companies, and then they bought all over the world the seed companies, and they combined it, the seed with the poison, and they had double profit from this too. And now they want to sell more poison because they say we can't help you in another way. And they are inventing the so-called stacked GM seed. That means for the moment we have a Roundup ready seeds which were resistant against one poison, like Roundup containing glyphosate. But now they were creating plants which were resistant, and by genetically modification they create this, which were resistant against 8 different poisons. Because they say if this one wouldn't work, you can use another one. But your really plant like soy wouldn't be touched by this. And they don't think about it, how these different poisons work together. It's not just to decide, okay, there is one poison, this poison we have looked at over years already, but what is happening if you have more poisons? And what is happening if you were changing a cell being afterwards resistant against 8 different poisons? And to do this, they really shoot these particles of genes into the cell, and you can imagine that it will be destroying maybe the whole order of the cell. And what will be happening there? And that is what Arpad Pusztai was saying when he said, if you eat an animal which was fed by genetically modified feed, you are eating a different animal. It's no
right.
more the same animal. But to really prove this, there is no research, nothing is done in this area.
it's interesting. I read a review of Scientists Under Attack that said it was described it as a documentary thriller. And I must say, it, you know, this is a topic that I think I know a lot about. And yet I was watching it and I was saying, oh my God. And it is a thriller. It's, you know, and part is the way you weave the story, and, you know, you have Jeffrey Smith, one, you know, going down the road and finding this and talking to this person, and it's kind of like a journey, where you experience the shock of what some of these scientists have discovered and experienced. One of the things I wanted to mention to you is I have a theory, which is only a hypothesis, but if you look at the effort in the 90s to kind of roll this, you know, the control of the seed and the food supply out, one of my theories is that for many years the U.S. dollar and the control of fiat currencies has depended on controlling basically the trade in oil and the sea lanes. And the reality is, if we switch to different kinds of energy, the question is, okay, well, what asset are you going to control that will control a global digital currency? And I, you know, looking at the ferociousness with which this is implemented globally, one of the things I wonder is, do the bankers think they need control of the food supply to basically launch a successful or maintain a successful reserve currency globally, and that there's, you know, that there may be more connection between seed and food and money than most people think.
Mm-hmm. And I sometimes had the idea maybe someday Monsanto or companies like Monsanto would say, oh, it was an error to do the genetic modification, et cetera, et cetera. It didn't work so well as we planned. But at the end, they have the patent on all the plants over the planet. And that maybe is their real aim, like we find out now with the resistance to all these plants who try to cover the soy and cotton fields. They can sell more poison, more chemicals.
Well, I think that absolutely is their aim. And if you look at the story in Scientists Under Attack about the scientists who discovered that these genetically modified seeds had migrated into areas, you know, indigenous areas where no one, you know, far so in Mexico where they weren't allowed, and so thousands of miles, you know, beyond where they're supposed to be, they are. You know, one of the questions I have is I think there's a reasonable chance they've been spraying and spreading them illegally to make sure that they do get everywhere. So, you know, I think
they try it in different ways. The United States gave food help to African people. And this was genetically modified maize.
Right.
And on the other hand, they try to create since years this so-called beta-carotene rice, this so-called golden rice that would help so much people in the eastern areas and in Bangladesh, people wouldn't get blind and so on. But the real reason is, but it didn't work, and they were speaking about it since 10 years. But it didn't work because people had to eat more than, I think, 5 or 6 times the portions that they normally eat from rice. And on the other hand, they need oil and fat to get this beta-carotene really open up and work in that way. And they use this as advertising how good this would be and so on. And and the main lie that they were creating is we can stop the hunger in the world. And that is not true, because What they promised is we use less poison, we use less herbicide, and we will have higher yields. And all these three points were proved meanwhile as wrong, because
right.
the yields are maybe more as the first 2 years, but then they go down, and also with herbicides and poisons they go up, high rocketing, like Jeffrey would say.
Well, you have to understand what is really happening to fathom that it's really this extraordinary. You need to go through the different parts of the food chain, the scientists, the farmers, the lawyers, the researchers, the consumers, you know, and you need to do it globally. And that's why I think this thing of multiple documentaries over, you know, over a decade's time is such an important and amazing contribution,
mm-hmm.
because it's that way that you can go through the whole food chain and see it in all of its complexity and see how many excellent people there are who have taken extraordinary efforts to try and understand mm-hmm. and communicate and document this. And but without a media that will, you know, show us that picture, I think, you know, that we, you know, we're lost. And so I like to think we're found thanks to you and your film. So before we end, Bertram, if you could simply walk us through how to buy these documentaries. One of the things that I'm going to encourage my subscribers to do is to buy them and to watch them and to pass them around, because I think they're just, you know, they're great. They're just excellent documentaries, and it's excellent information, and I think it's just invaluable. So if you could walk us through how we get them, that would be
mm-hmm.
terrific.
Yeah, there will be first Life Running Out of Control. It's with a distributor in the United States called Bullfrog Film. You can find it in the internet. Bullfrog Films in the United States. With Percy, we don't have, unfortunately, a distributor who is distributing the film in the States and Canada. We are still looking for one, and if somebody hears it and finds interest, we can send a DVD, and that they could make the distribution from the States or from Canada. And then the third film, Scientist Under Attack, will be available with Jeffrey Smith and his Institute for Responsible Technology. I don't know, because I'm a little bit surprised that I have to say it exactly here. But you will find with Jeffrey Smith, his Institute of Responsible Technology, and there you will be able to order this film. Maybe he has not yet the copies. It may take 2 or 3 more weeks, but then you can buy it there.
And can we buy it from your website?
All films also on our website, which is mm-hmm. www.denkmal-film.com. And there you will be led to a shop where you can buy it in English and also in NTSC version. And you can also go directly to the film, that is www.scientistsunderattack.com.
Now, I have a friend who's a documentary maker who told me that the way that the Secret was phenomenally successful is that you could stream it on the internet for not that much money. Have you ever thought of making these available by streaming?
Yeah, we are trying to start this, but didn't do it until now. We made experience here, but it was not quite very successful. But maybe we should start this too. Yes. We are thinking
well,
of it. And,
okay. Well,
normally, you know, we are filmmakers, and we would like to have distributors who say, okay, we take
uh-huh.
this film and do this work for you. But unfortunately, most of this work is still on our shoulders, too. And that's,
yeah.
a little bit too much. Sometimes.
You know, watching what you've accomplished, it's just amazing. You know, I'm a little bit. I remember once watching Tina Turner in concert and turning to a friend of mine. You know, Tina Turner was 65 and jumping all over the place. And I looked at my friend and I said, "What's our excuse?" And I feel the same way watching you take your cameras and crew all over the world. And
To thank you very, very much for this interview and for publishing this films in the United States, that it can be spread and people can be inspired to fight against this terrible interest. Yeah.
I'll make sure to put up a link that has links to where they find them all to make it easier. So we'll get that done. Well, thank you, Bertram Verhaert, very, very much. I know you've taken time from your vacation in the Austrian Alps to speak to us, appreciate it.
I like to do it, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, and you a wonderful day. Okay. So.
Remarkable interview, remarkable man. One suggestion that came in on the webinar was that it was hard to hear, yes, if you're not used to the German accent. We will make a transcript. We just posted at your control panel an updated transcript for the top 10 dates, which we'll be diving into in Precious Metals Report next week. Lots to talk about there. And we posted a transcript of the Lawrence Wilkerson interview. Great interview. I strongly recommend it on geopolitics today. And we will post one by next week from Jim Norman on the oil card, really. Another great interview. Two great ones with Wilkerson and Norman on geopolitics. Let me just go through a couple questions that came in while the interview was playing. Very interesting one, quote, "I'm interested in why the medical community is buying into genetically modified foods, why they are superior. I had a physical in the last week and my doctor recommended I use a soy milk with my cereal made from soy that is genetically modified and controlled by Monsanto. He tried to convince me that it was superior. I was a bit surprised by this recommendation. I've never heard of this happening before. I'm going to look into it. Thanks for bringing this to my attention." A question requesting a comment on codex requirements for prescription vitamins in Europe. Interestingly enough, Scott Tipps, the head of the oldest and largest national health organization, is going to be on this summer in July. We've got an interview with him on codex. He's really as top an expert on that topic as there is, so that's coming up. Also, a question about weather modification from someone who, if you haven't listened to our series on chemtrails that we did, three, a special report by me, and then two with Clifford Carnicom, including a transcript on that in your control panel, I strongly recommend that you take a look at it. Another question on GMO research, and I would really point you to the Future Running Out of Control documentary and encourage you watch that. It's very good and helps address your question there. And finally, a great point from someone who pointed out that the name of the financial information on FDIC banks that you can get is called the Call Report. And he points out the FDIC publishes the Call Report. You can get them at their website. So thank you very much for that. Again, next week, Precious Metals Market Report, the new transcript, updated transcript on the top 10 dates is up at the at your control panel. We're going to do the final dates, including the strong dollar policy next week with Franklin Sanders. And then for June 16th and June 23rd, Unpacking Financial and Investment Advice, Part 1 and Part 2, a big special I'm doing, really in response to so much feedback I've gotten from you and from my clients of the confusion caused by so much of the popular financial and investment advice, both in the mainstream media as well as in the internet. So I'm looking forward to doing that, and I really hope it helps you. So access the new transcripts that Jim Norman hopefully will have up sometime next week, lots of good stuff, and I really hope you find them useful for if it's easier to read the transcripts than to listen to the MP3 file. And so, again, until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.